Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Dirty Church Radio. Tonight, I'm opening up tonight because our host is running a little bit late. Oh, hold on 1 second. Hello. Again, sorry. I think that was a host trying to call in. I'm guessing they'll call back. Yes, tonight our topic is going to be church hurt and how it affects the saints. There's a lot of people out there that actually have or had or are continuing right now being hurt by the church, by the religion of the church, by the leaders. In some cases, the leaders are actually doing the hurting. In other instances, the people are actually doing the hurt to the leaders. There's a lot of ways to hurt people through religion or hurt people through a certain belief. And hopefully tonight we will, touch base with some of these issues. So if you are a caller, I would encourage you to call in tonight. Let us know if you are the one being hurt or the one who have hurt in the past. Again, this is Dirty Church Radio, a place where you can air out any dirty laundry that you may have. This is the place and the platform to vent, to express your feelings on the issues at hand, to eventually come clean of anything that may be holding you or have you in bondage in any type of way. We just basically want to give people the chance to express themselves any way they see fit. Again, this is the platform and the place to do so. So tonight we would encourage you to come on and share with us a little bit. Again, I believe our host will probably be calling in a little while, in a little bit. But until then, some may ask, have I ever been hurt by the church? I was raised and brought up in the church my whole life. I continued to go to church. My parents were leaders of their own church for a very, very long time. I believe over 30 years. But speaking for myself, I have never been hurt by the church in any type of way. To my knowledge, even from what I know and what I can remember, I've never been hurt by the church. I believe that the church has been always very generous in the sense of how I was treated personally. I don't have any bad memories or any type of animosity against the church because of what a certain person within the church or a certain belief system did to me in any kind of way. I actually love the church. I don't necessarily enjoy everything about it per se. As you get older, you start to, you know, realize and consider things or accept things to be true or not accept things to be true, and you don't choose to follow certain things. But overall, I enjoy the church. Always have, and I believe that I always will. I know of people that shall be remained nameless that actually has been hurt by the church. Sometimes dealing with money, sometimes dealing with betrayal, sometimes dealing with distrust, lack of honesty, and sometimes more than what people may imagine. People, leaders that are very ignorant to certain things. And because of their ignorance, it allowed certain people to be led astray or go in situations, go through situations and not handle it correctly because the individual put so much trust into the leader. And by them doing that, it kind of put them in, you know, a very, very awkward or unsettled area in their life or situation that they couldn't get out of, and eventually led them to become very, very angry at the church or at someone particularly in the church per se. When we talk about church, what are we referring to? Well, church can mean a lot of things. You want to get, you know, deep and very spiritual, and you know, you can look at the term, the Greek term for church, which is the ecclesia, I believe. Basically, what that is it's the church, someone who is set apart. Then also you can look at the church as a building, an actual place where people come to reverence and worship and honor and give praises to a particular God or belief. All of these things are kind of ideas, and the other one is more so an object, an inanimate object that has no feelings or has no emotion. But most people know the term, you know, church hurt. It's more so of the people in the church that may hurt someone. The people, usually, like I said, the leaders or fellow congregants in the church. Also, I don't know, it's scary sometimes to people that actually have been hurt, I'm guessing, to face their hurt or go back to the church where they were hurt at. It's like you kind of, in some cases, people throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. If someone within the church, especially someone with some type of authority in the church, does someone wrong, they kind of, the person who's been harmed or hurt actually allows that situation to exclude them from a particular church, sometimes a particular religion, or sometimes the whole faith in general. A lot of people are abused in the church. A lot of people are ostracized in the church. But there are some times where, you know, the church does very, 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 very good for people. It does help people's upbringing and situations, environments, and the culture, and their local areas. Some churches are a huge asset to that, the upbringing of any type of neighborhood. And I believe that those churches are basically doing something that could potentially be beneficial to a community and overall to, you know, a local area and also to a state. So church doesn't always do bad things to people. I believe bad people do bad things to other people. And if they so happen to be in the church, a lot of times the church actually gets tied into the hurt and the bad. A lot of times as well, the interpretation of certain scriptures dealing with the type of faith you follow and believe in allows people to get hurt. Because a lot of times religion is very good for judging people, making people believe that they are less than or they are broken or not well, needing to get well, so to say. So, we're just waiting for some callers to actually call in. Again, our host, Jay, is, I believe, is running a little late. He should be in a little while. Until then, I don't know how long I can actually talk and keep people interested without actually having someone to converse back with. People, if you've been listening and tuning into the show, the times that I open up, I always make the same statement on it makes it a whole lot more interesting with me if I have someone to converse back and forth with and have some type of open discussion. So if you're listening and you have the time and you're not afraid, call in. Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know why you're thinking it. Let us know if you have ever experienced any type of situation concerning what our topic is about today, which is church hurt. Does the church hurt people? If so, how? Why? What effects may it have on people? And how can we prevent church hurt from continuing to kind of be an epidemic in religious movements? Even though it happens, we really want to find out a way to stop it. So let's get some input on this. Let's get some clarity behind why people hurt people, especially in the church, when the church is meant to help people, to heal people who claim to be sick, to fix people who claim to be broken. Just to go off that right there, I think that's a way that people can actually be hurt. If religion teaches someone that if someone is experiencing a certain type of life or doing a certain thing that is contrary to what they believe in, they would call that person broken, or they would call that person sick, needing to get well. But if the person who they are referring to doesn't feel as though they are sick, needing to be well, that could be very stressful. Why are you giving me medicine and I'm not sick? And the argument is because we know that you're sick. You may not understand, or you may not necessarily agree with you being sick, but you are sick and you need to be well. So that's usually the case in a lot of situations. Like I said, I would like to get some input on this topic tonight. So if you're out there, call in. Let me know what's on your mind. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know why you're thinking it. Trying to get some people to actually call in. We're on the show right now, live. Waiting for one or two of the other hosts to call in. Even some other people as well. Let's hear your thoughts. Let's hear what you're thinking. I also have something to say about why people hurt people. Why would we think someone would deliberately want to hurt someone else? Especially if they are in the church. Because that wouldn't be such a Christian thing to do, Islamic thing to do. I mean, why would we consider people to be, you know, why would we consider people to be hurt, or why would we actually abuse people if we can help them? Do we even know sometimes as leaders that we are abusing people? And I think that could be very interesting to consider. Some people don't even know that they're hurting people. Some people think that they're trying to help someone, but in actuality, they're hurting someone through their help. And even though help sometimes can be very painful, only when the person who is seeking the help is trying to get well, I can see how that would be painful or could be painful. But what if I'm not sick? What if I'm not hurt? What if I'm not, you know, what if I don't see myself in that way? But yet and still, the leader of the church is actually claiming that I am sick, that I do need to be well. How do I feel about that? How does it come to some type of resolution there? The leader believes that it's his job and it's his duty, or her duty, to fix people, to make sure people aren't being abused, to help the ones that are in need, even if they realize, even if they don't realize that they need the help. It's my job because I have a spiritual connection with the Creator, thus giving me access to know things that you may not know. And the person who they are preaching to or trying to fix, they say, well, I'm not hurt. I'm not sick. Stop trying to force feed me something I don't want to be fed. What do we say about that? How do we function, basically, with that? I think sometimes the saints, when the saints hurt each other, you know, when the people who are sitting in the congregation in the seats next to each other, when they hurt each other, I think that's also bad as well. Excuse me. Hold on 1 second. I think we have a caller. Hello, caller?
Yeah.
Hello?
Nice, what up?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Africa, how you feeling today?
I'm doing quite well. How are you, sir?
Good. I can't complain. You making out pretty good with the weather there over there, sir?
Yes. For everybody that does not know, we are actually on the East Coast where the storm actually hit us. Hold on 1 second. We have another caller calling in. Hello?
What's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going, Jay?
Good, man. Good, good.
All right. We also have another caller in, Mr. Giants.
Oh, Mr. Giants in the day? Okay.
Yes,
sir. How you feeling, my brother?
Good, man. Good, man. Good. I'm good.
Good. How y'all looking tonight?
We're 7-0 right now.
Okay. Who got that 7?
The Saints got 7.
Oh, okay.
No,
all
no,
right.
It's 7-3.
Right. It's 7-3. Let's not hold back that 3.
Yeah, you know. How them Giants feeling?
Yeah, you know, top of the NFC East, can't complain. So that's a beautiful thing.
I caught an L yesterday, right?
That happens in this game.
Oh. Okay.
You know, but in the column we on, I bet we got
Pittsburgh.
More W than I have.
Pittsburgh, right? It was Pittsburgh?
Yesterday, yeah. They caught that off yesterday and caught that L. But it's all good. We stand on top of that East.
Okay, I hear you. So, what y'all fellas was discussing, man? So far.
Well, he actually, Mr. Giants actually called in, maybe a minute or two, less than that, maybe before you called in. So, I was just trying to hold it down. I let people know that you know it's not too interesting just me talking alone. It's always more interesting when I have fellow, you know, humans that I can. Converse with, you know what I'm saying, to make it a lot more interesting. But, yeah, so we're basically, you know, just getting it started, basically. I mean, I've been on for, like, at least a half hour, but.
Oh, so I know you've been talking. I know the advocate had something to say.
I wasn't necessarily taking a position. I was just more so asking how can the church hurt people? Who actually does the hurting? Why do they hurt? You know, just basically asking questions until someone gets on. So I may have a discussion to make it a little bit more interesting.
Okay.
Well, you know, just to basically start it up, how do you think? I'll go with Mr. Giant first. How do you think the church or religion may actually hurt someone?
Well, you know what I'm saying? Definitely the church itself can be hurting to others. And I think I even heard you say, so, you know, you could be hurt by the church, by your brother, sister, and you're not even, or they're not even knowing their action towards you was hurtful. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I can even just give you an example of how the church works, in which we've all been in the church piece for all our lives, basically. But even just a situation I'm knowing of. I was listening to a conversation of how they say, you know, when you're active in the church, let's say you're higher ups, your bishops, your ministers, your deacons, they more embrace you and take you in and acknowledge you because of the work of what you're doing in the church. And don't get me wrong, of course, you know, if you're doing any type of work, first you should only be looking for blessings from God, not from no man. But, you know, if you are appreciated, that's awesome, my man, that's great. But just know why you're doing it. But they also said, the moment I stop working and doing things underneath, you know, the higher up, I was no longer acknowledged. Because time the new person moved in, now they're acknowledged for what they do, but did you completely forget all that I have done? But now that I have taken a break in the ministry, I'm no longer getting that love and that normal communication or converse or that relationship I used to have with you. You get what I'm saying by that?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I know a lot of people that, you know, go through that. They hold some type of position. And, you know, they are appreciated in some sense, and they are held in high regard. Let's say they may take a break or they may leave for a little while or whatever the situation may be, they step down from their position or take some type of hiatus from their position. And then during that time of their break, people usually tend to forget all of the work that they put in. And that can be very, very, very stressful. That could be very depressing. And, you know, that some sometimes lets you know how people may look at you. So, yeah, I definitely can understand it.
Wow. You know something? It's something you said that. You know how, like, you could be real loyal, right? You know, real faithful, and, you know, you always show up, do what you do. And if you miss a time, normally that time will be magnified more than all the time that you was faithful.
Dang, that's true.
Right.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? It seemed like that time that you miss or you're not there, I have more weight, you know what I mean, than all the time you put in. You know what I'm saying? Like, all the time you put in is forgotten based upon that time you didn't show up.
Yeah.
Right.
Lots of sense. I also asked another question. I just put this question out there. What do you think about leaders who actually, or people that have been hurt by leaders because the leaders are kind of ignorant to certain things, and because of their ignorance, it may have led, you know, someone to take a bad turn or to take a wrong turn, and it that person ends up in a very, very distressful situation.
Mr. Giants?
Well, first, let's just say, of course we have leaders, and we appreciate them, we love them, and we do take guidance. We feel that we should be able to go to them for anything, even for a direction, but at the end of the day, we know who our personal relationship is with. And not only, we may listen to the word from man on here who we may look up to, him, but at the same time, we should make sure our confirmation could come from God. So, but at the same time, yes, as the leaders, they need to be more conscious of, let's say, their sheep, of what they may go through and what, let's say, situation they may feel like they need to be catered to, then not to be brushed off, because if that person's relationship with Christ isn't that strong, they may do look to you like, help, God me. But if you're being looked at like, you know, get out of here, that can force you to drive yourself to do something you have no business doing.
You know something I think with leaders, and I'm not trying to, like, go off, like, topic, but it's sometimes I think, man, when we blame leaders, especially, you know, how we were just talking about what do you do if you was there and you do what you did and you took a break or whatever and someone else comes and fills that position and you feel like, and it's like you're overlooked or something, right? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah.
My thing is sometimes I think it's really not the leader's fault, because I believe the ones that have been there for a while, I think the leader, he expects or hopes that the person that's been there longer would have matured to the point to understand that the new person would need more attention than they would, in a sense. You know what I mean? I don't think that a leader expects an infant to stay an infant forever. So I believe that he expects you to grow, and I believe a lot of times church hurt comes or is perceived as church hurt because a lot of people aren't really willing to grow up, and they constantly want to be.
I agree with that. That completely do make sense, meaning to the point I have, let's say, somewhat said you to the point that you can't go on your own, and we're not denying that, and yes, please understand when I do come on to, let's say, the new babies to the church, but I'm saying completely somewhat disown me in some sense because of my lack of work that I may not no longer participate in the ministry.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you feel like you disown because you're not mentioned? And since you've been away, you're the one that feel uncomfortable coming back because things are still moving and you don't know where to fit in at when you come back? So it feel like you're distant?
I mean, they think so. Well, let's say this. Let me ask you this. If the person is no longer active, should me and my leader communication stop?
No.
Active
no,
or not?
Nah, but what I'm saying is when you come back, like this is how I'm looking at it. Say if I have a father and I go away, I'm in the army or I'm away for a while. I'm away, I'm doing something. I'm like a child, you know, I'm out on my own now. I made some decisions, I go out. When I come back to my home, even though I've been away for a while, I shouldn't come back with a stranger's mentality. Like, come back with the I should come back, like, with
so the home.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but my thing is, you will feel some type of way. You will feel some type of way if you came back home and your cousin was sleeping in your bed in your room and he kind of took it over and your parents said it was okay.
Yeah, I understand, right? But as an adult, right, as an adult or mature-minded, that's something you will understand. It's not like when you come back, they saying you sleep outside. You know what I'm saying? But, like, you shouldn't, if you come back and you've been going and your cousin was, like, he's using your room, you shouldn't come back with the mentality, like, I'm here, get out. You know what I'm saying? Like, you shouldn't.
I don't know. I'm used to my room. Get out. So nah.
You know what I mean? I think when you come back, you should peep things out and see where you fit in at and not just come back with the Bogart mentality. Like
right,
you're just trying to keep up.
And you're right about that. And that's what I am saying. I'm not saying, hey, I come in from door. And I'm not even saying if I left. I'm saying if I just took a step back, I'm still there on a normal basis. I may not be working as much. But I, like you said, yo, come in and peep to see how things is. And I'm saying over time, the person has sat back and peeped and said, wow, I am being mistreated. I am being cooking.
Yeah.
I have been cooking different. Like you said, like not from jump, you know, back to me. No. I'm just saying a blunt, straight up difference of how our relationship was. And it's not too much because of something. I was dating. I'm just saying my past work that I put in, my seed I put in, that should be held up forever.
All right, so let me ask you this then. So if you feel like it should be held forever, right, when you come back, before you actually claim something to be so, like, all right, they acted funny with me, shouldn't you talk to the leader? Shouldn't you say something? Shouldn't you get some type of communication, especially if you had it before? You know what I'm saying? Shouldn't you talk or see, have a conversation with them to actually see where they're at concerning you?
All right. So, and I'm saying, you're right. I'm not firing off the handle just saying, yo, what's good is in what it used to be like, blah, 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 blah. But how about when I do reach out to that pastor, minister, and before when I used to get you in that first phone call, now I got to send you an email after 6 phone calls hoping you get back to me. That, after all that's tried, see, I'm saying when he straight up showed you that, yo, it's not the same no more. They may never say those words, but your actions are showing it.
Well, how did you leave? And not saying that it's you, but how did you leave?
No, and like I said, for example, I'm going to church every Sunday, and I'm not talking about me. But let's just say I was an honor bearer, or, you know, you were the right-hand man, and I served one Sunday of the month. And just like you said, the babies come in now, or Bishop may tend to them more compared to the person that was there forever, and I don't need that attention. Just like I don't need that attention no more, why can't I take a break? That's all I'm saying. Let's say for those that acknowledge, you know what, I've been serving for a minute, I'm going to have to take just a step back because now I want to take more time for home. I can't follow you every Sunday to this service and this service all over the night, come pick you up in your house. I notice that I need personal time for me and my family.
And you know what? I think that comes with even when you was faithful, when you was there, you should have been establishing some balance then. because sometimes if you go too far, you burnt out. Like, it's almost like you're doing it, but in the back of your mind, you really complaining. You really don't, because you get burnt out and you don't feel as though you got any room. You feel obligated, and then it's to the point you don't want to say no. So when you finally leave, you know what I'm saying, it's felt stronger, because it's like when you leave now, it's a complete disappearance.
And I don't want to keep using the word leave. I'm there. I just say I haven't served in a couple of weeks. You know what I'm saying? I'm still there. I'm just, someone new is coming in, so we all alternating. You know what I'm saying? It's not a complete left. I'm there. I might just didn't serve that Sunday. Quickly,
but
among the other people, they're going to speak.
But you know what I'm saying? Now, if you was, now this is what happens, too. And I don't know if the advocate might agree with me on this. It doesn't matter. We always disagree on something. But it all depends on how strong your presence was felt when you was there. Like, if you was, like, a strong part of what makes things move, and you're real good at what you do, and then when you leave, it's actually felt, then I believe sometimes that's what creates the problem. Because then I believe sometimes the church or the leader or whatever will take it like, you know you're important in this area of what we're trying to do and how important the ministry is and what we're trying to reach. Why would you do this at this time when it's a crucial time or a time of transition when you're really needed? You know what I'm saying? So like,
yeah, I think both of you guys are making valid points. I hear from one side basically is saying how it's very, very apparent that I've been serving for a very long time. I took a position and I kept faithful to it until I wanted to take some type of break. When I took that break, you know, some people may have felt salty because I took that break. And then on the other side is basically saying, well, maybe it's not necessarily the leader's fault for the way that you are taking it, because you basically knew how important your position was. And because you knew how important it is, you know, in some kind of way, I may feel some type of way. Is that necessarily wrong? No, I don't think so. Is it necessarily wrong for the person to feel salty? No, I don't think so. I mean, so both of you have valid points. I think it becomes an issue or becomes a problem when you allow how you feel to interject on your actions, and your actions may actually do something that may be negative. I think that's when the problem comes. But everybody has their own right to feel any type of way. You're entitled to feel whatever way you choose to feel. It becomes an issue when you act upon those feelings and do something negative. But I have another question. I said the question before, but I don't think I elaborated on it. Let's say a leader of the church, whether it's a pastor, whether it's a Sunday school teacher, or whatever the case is, someone who's actually teaching you. What if, because of the lack of knowledge that they have within that particular belief or religion, and they teach you something, and they teach you something that necessarily isn't biblically sound, or you know, it doesn't necessarily coincide with what the word says, since we're talking about Christianity, how and that affects, that may affect the church. How do you take that? How do you guys feel on that?
Well, I believe like this. I believe that if a leader, I believe a real leader, if a leader teaches something or says something that eventually turns out to be error or not correct, but he wasn't saying it from a deceiving place, but he said something and it's not right. And I believe if he came into the knowledge of that what he said was not right, I believe a great leader is a leader that can admit he was wrong and correct it.
Mm.
Now, I believe it's a difference when a leader says something, right, and he's wrong, and he finds out he's wrong, but pride won't let him admit to his wrong, and he tries to do everything to cover up the wrong or to make the wrong right.
Mm. So he's lying.
I believe sometimes if he let
pride
get in the way, if he let pride get in the way because he looks stupid now because he said something wrong,
mm-hmm.
and we find out that it's you know, it's not right, and he realizes it's not right, but he doesn't want to embrace the wrongness and correct it.
Mm-hmm.
He'd rather just let pride take a hold of him and try to keep proving himself in the midst of the wrong.
I got you. It makes sense. How about you, Mr. Giants? Personally, have you ever been in a situation where you know a leader that was actually wrong about something, whether they, you know, fessed up to it or whether they didn't fess up to it?
Specifically, any topics off my head, maybe 50-50, but I will say, you know how sometimes I like a lie, like Mr. Chase said, or Aaron said, or excuse me, after says, he's lying, and I said definitely to himself. Once you hold on to that lie, it gets so deep, you start to believe it yourself. So that's why it's so hard to even turn around from what you convinced yourself was the truth to even hold on to that lie that you already said, this is true, and I am too big of a man in my head to allow you to think you was right against my word. Now, of course, I've been back and forth with a bunch of ministers and stand my ground of why I know something's correct. But in their own right, sickle mind, they're going to hold on to what they believe is right, knowing it was wrong. When they could take the grown man approach, as Mr. J say, hey, you know what? Now I think about it. Come to me another day. I looked over it. Even though, I mean, could have been, I was wrong then and there. But even the next day, they could maybe come about and say, hey, I understand where you was coming from. But as a leader, sometimes they don't want to show no type of fault.
Because you know what I think what happens with that is because some leaders may think that if I admit to a wrong and I'm wrong and everyone knows I'm wrong, now I lose a sense of power and authority. And when that becomes the main focus, that's when you're deceiving yourself. Because I would rather have a leader that I know that is real, that has flaws, but that can acknowledge that he has flaws. But my thing is about a leader willing to correct it. And if he says something wrong and he finds out it's wrong, all right, let's correct it and take us into truth. But don't feel threatened by admitting a wrong, thinking that it's going to make you less of a leader. I think it'll make you greater of a leader.
All right, I have a follow-up question. This is a good question dealing with this topic. To take it a step further, how about leaders who believe something wholeheartedly? For instance, let's say that I'm a leader and you are one of the saints of my church. And I say that God has spoken to me and said, Jay, you are sick and I'm here to heal you. And you say, I'm not sick. And me as a leader, I'm saying, yes, you don't necessarily realize that you're sick, but I'm basically going to heal you because I'm not talking about a physical sickness. I'm just saying, like, you know, let's say for instance, I don't want to go too extreme, but let's say for instance, I say that you as Jay, you're basically living a certain type of life where you are a movie, you are an actor, and a part of your job description is you basically have to portray a gangster, and you may have to curse a couple of times, whatever like that. So I'm saying, and you think that it's perfectly fine to do so. This is what you do for a living. It's not who you are. It's just who, you know, you're acting. And I'm your pastor and I'm your preacher. And I say, well, you know what? You are a troubled person because you think that, you know, that this is okay and it's not okay. And I'm going to pray for you because you need to be healed from this. You need to be delivered from this. Can you see that being an issue?
Well, it all depends because, first of all, if my leader says there's a sickness that God needs to deal with or he needs to heal or he needs to deal with, first of all, we need to talk. First, you have to let me know what the sickness is, all right? I want you to let me know what it is. And I know me, I'm not crazy. So I'm not just going to agree with anything that you're saying to me. Just be, you know what I'm saying? Like, so my thing is, now, if you say some stuff to me that I can take into consideration and be like, well, all right, I can see your point. And I know me, because we all know ourselves better than anybody. So we know those thoughts and those things that we deal with when no one else is around. So if a leader taps into some things that I only know, then in my mind, I'll be like, well, maybe I'll give it to, you know, we could pray about it. You know what I mean? We can, you know, give it to God or in a sense like that. You know what I mean?
But my question to you is, what if you are saying that you are not sick, but the leader is insistent on that you are sick,
whether or not you believe so or not.
It
comes down to me agreeing with it because, listen, my thing is like this. If I'm sick physically, right, if I'm sick physically, I know I'm sick before anybody because I'm sick. It's my affliction. So if it's something spiritual and you're telling me something that I can't see myself, then you have to take me into the depths of what you see. And you have to show, you know what I mean? You have to really explain to me, like, exactly what it is.
Okay.
And then
how about
from there, we have to line it up, you know. Then I have to line it up with the perception of what I see within my life because I live with me. You know what I'm saying?
I got you. What do you have to say, Ms. Giants?
Well, you know, when you hear something now, let's all keep it real. You ain't never been standing there, and your preacher, your pastor, your bishop, whoever, I'm talking about your leader, not just any old Okito. I'm talking about your leader.
Mm-hmm.
They start to speak into your life, and you in your head like, I hope he's right. I hope he ain't gonna just start blabbling. I'm trusting because I don't want my leader to be telling me something that I'm like in my head like, no. But you will almost try to be like, okay, you could be right here, you could be right there. That's why you're saying, Jay, which a lot of preachers don't do, why give me the specifics of it? If I'm sick, what is it exactly? If I don't know, it's something, you say, yeah, I'm sick, I have something in my body, you should be the first to know it, right?
Yeah,
especially
if you
go to the doctor. Yeah. No, but he's, now I'm saying, he's telling you something that he caught by the spirit before you caught by the doctor.
Well, that's what I said. It all depends on what you're saying. Are you saying you see something coming on me, or is this a spiritual spirit? Are you saying that I have a demonic spirit? Are you saying that there is an issue in my flesh? You know what I mean? My thing is like this. if I go to the doctors and I go to the doctor and I'm sick, you know, they're going to run tests and they're going to give me a diagnosis of what they think the problem is.
Right.
Right. So my thing is, if you're my leader and you're talking to me and you're telling me something wrong with me, you just can't say something wrong with me and leave it up in the air. You can't cut me. If you're going to do surgery within my life, don't just cut me open and leave me open on the table.
But they do that a lot. And yeah. then say, all right, I told you what I can. Now you go fast and pray about it and get the rest of the answer. Come on, they don't do that.
Yeah, because some people say, you know, the prophecy comes in parts.
Yeah, in parts. Yeah. You know, so let me ask you this question. And this is something. Yesterday, I met with a friend, you know, who was in the music game, right? And he was telling me, like, on the West Coast, when he went to church, and, you know, it's a lady pastor who got a church out there. A lady who played in a couple movies. She's a pastor or something. And he said he went to the church. And, you know, they was having a testimony service. And he said a girl got up and was like, Lord. He said the church, he was like, yo, Jay, man, the church ain't the normal church. Like, they like, it's like when you go in there, it's like a club. You know what I mean? Like, they really like partying. Like, when they start dancing, they be up on each other. Like, they in the club, like on it, real off the chain. So he said, a girl got up and was like, I like to give honor to God. I like to thank God. And she was like, I've been out of work. And she was like, I like to thank God for giving me work this week. But everybody looked at her and knew who she was. And, like, she a porn star. So, like,
that's all right. That church.
That's all right. Why not?
Oh, fucking God. Finish the story.
You know what I'm saying? So it was like in church, so it's like, yo, like you in church, like that's your job, but you thanking God, you giving God the credit for blessing you with.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear that. I have a story too. This is something that personally happened to me. I play for a couple of churches. I'm a musician, so one of the churches I actually play for, I was playing, and the emotional aspect of the church was really high. The spirit was in there. Everybody was dancing and shouting, going in, right? So, what happened was, a lady she comes to the church every now and again. And she, you know, she was going around prophesying to people, speaking in tongues and prophesying to people. This happened last year around this time, to be exact. So she came up to me while I was playing, and she stood in front of the piano and said, God told me to tell you if you get off that piano right now and give God praise, He's gonna bless you more than you ever been blessed your whole entire life. And I looked at her and said, "Nah, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm okay." And when I did that, it kind of broke her out of her flow. And after she, and I kid you not, this is a true story. After that, she didn't prophesy to anybody else that day. Now, she prophesied to people after that. She came to church, like I said, she comes quite often. But that day, she didn't prophesy to anybody else. She sat back down. She literally sat down and just went on with the rest of the service. But she didn't prophesy anymore. She stopped speaking in tongues. She just sat down. And the pastor of the church kind of knew that feeling because I don't know if it's the vibe that I give off, but she kind of, I felt that the pastor kind of got nervous, like, well, you know, I wouldn't go to him if I were you, unless she was sure. But I have a question for you guys. That experience, what do you say about people that, or prophets or whomever have that type of, you know, do something like that, and somebody doesn't accept what they're saying to them? What do you call them a liar, or?
Well, I'm going to tell you like this. This is my thing on it. Everybody that comes up to you, some people come to you and say stuff out of their own emotion, out of their own feeling. And then on top of that, a lot of times, it's the rejection of you not agreeing what they're saying makes them feel that feeling like everyone is going to look at them like they're false and they're inaccurate. And that feeling right there is a, you know what I mean? It's not a feeling that would make you, you either going to do two things. You either going to do like she did, stop and sit down, or you're going to keep pressing the matter.
All right. Or even say, this person, you may not get your blessing because you didn't accept the word that the guy has gave me to give you.
You know what I mean? They'll give you a reason because they don't want to be left out there. It's almost like this. You're going to shake somebody's hand, and you just stuck. You ever had that feeling, your hand out there? And
and somebody don't shake your hand back.
Somebody don't shake your hand, and you just, like, left out there.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's almost a feeling like that, especially if you're a person and you're, what you're saying it with such confidence, and then you say, like, no, like, I'm okay. You know, I done been in church where somebody prophesied to somebody, and the person said, no, you're wrong. That's not right. You have the wrong person. Like, I've heard that. And then I heard that person actually say, well, I know I'm right, and you'll see. It's your fault if you don't hearken to the voice of God. You know what I mean? And they'll come from the angle where, thus saith the Lord, I've done my part. I spoke what God said. So you can receive it or deny it. So
my question to you is that necessarily right? Can that hurt somebody? Like, the preacher that actually goes and prophesies to someone, and that person says, listen, I don't need that prophetic word. That's not beneficial to my life. I don't necessarily believe what you're saying to me. And that person or that preacher keeps pressing on and pressing on them and pressing on them and pressing on them. Do you think that that can hurt somebody?
Well, I believe it puts both in an awkward position.
Uh-huh.
It puts you, the one that's being told the prophecy, in an awkward position because now you have me out in the open, exposed in front of people. And now I have to speak against what you're saying in front of people. And now immediately it's going to make me look like I'm the disobedient one and the bad guy.
I'm sorry, Mr. Jay, real quick. But if the word is given to you by God, and you're here to give me what you saying, what given to you through the Spirit, why would you personally feel hurt or feel some type of way? Is God going to argue with him? Is God going to argue with one of us if he tells us something and we don't do it? It's more like, well, like you kind of said earlier, well, look, I told you what it is. Not in that type of manner, but I came to you, either you're going to accept it or not. So me personally, if it came from God, then I shouldn't feel hurt. But if I am the one pressing it because my own self want to feed you a word, then maybe I will feel some type of way because it was coming from me anyway.
Okay. Yeah. That's the thing, because my thing is like this. If God is telling you to tell someone something and they don't accept it, it's on them. You know what I mean? And it's scriptures, you know, if you go to the Bible, even in the Old Testament, the prophets was told to tell something, the watchman on the wall. You know what I mean? The thing is getting rid of the blood off your hands, actually saying it. If you don't say it, and that person, you know, falls in a ditch or is messed up and you had opportunity to warn them and you didn't, then now their error is the blood on your hands. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's like this. If you're in the flesh and you're being led emotionally and you're rejected, you're going to feel that emotion also, if it's an emotion.
I have a question for both of you, since you're the only two on the phone. Do you believe that the type of personalities that you two have, Do you give off the feeling to other people that maybe I shouldn't necessarily go to him and prophesy to him, or are you the type of person where people actually jump at the opportunity to prophesy to you?
No, I'm not. Me, in my whole life, I'm going to tell you, I'm not the person that in church gets the prophecy. I've been prophesied to, but I'm not the one that gets picked out. Like, I'm not that person. I think, because you know what? A lot of people say, I don't know how true it is, but a lot of people say that if you don't know me, I don't seem that approachable. I don't know how true that is. They say I let off a vibe where it's like it make a person hesitate twice before approaching me. But when a prophet is in the room, I'm not the type of person that's just like, oh, the prophet is here. That's when I'm at my highest level of observing. Like, now I'm watching you. Like, I'm really peeping everything. Like, I'm really watching. And even if the a person, the prophet, be like, yeah, I know y'all watching me. Me, I'm one of the ones, yes, I am. Yeah, I am watching you. Yeah, like right now I am watching you. You know what I mean? Because when you're dealing with, you're saying something from God, now you put everybody in a vulnerable state. You put everybody in a state now because you're saying that God is actually speaking to you. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, when you make a statement like that and saying that God has a word directly for me out of billions and billions of people that's in the world, and he's saying my name, for me, I believe that when you speak, it should be accurate.
Dag. Oh, you just made me confirm something inside my mind. All right, how about you, Mr. New York Giants?
Well, look. Nah, you know how it is, yo.
Yeah, do you feel as though you're the type of person, you know, who gets picked on to be prophesied to?
Like, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say what you may look like or what aura you may give off, but we all know your chances of getting prophesied to or pointed out if you're in that church for the first time. There's a chance. Hasn't been a bishop going to come up to you. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, you're right. It's going to happen a lot. New faces come into church, so it's kind of a sign for the unbeliever, where prophecy is supposed to be for the believer, but it's kind of a sign for the unbeliever. Well, since I don't know you, and basically since I never met you before, this is a time to show people that I'm serious about what I do because I don't know you.
Yeah, go ahead. Right.
You know, Aliza, what I don't like, though?
I'm going to respect
like
what you may have to say.
Out.
And hear you out. Like, okay, he ain't saying nothing too crazy. I will accept what you say. You didn't say nothing too much specifically either, but you also didn't say nothing out of the way, but more just trying to speak blessings into my life or what I may need to do, stuff I may already know. Or, let's say if you look like someone that don't even really know God, they may try to try you out. And I'm in my head like, man, you think I may go have a relationship just off of what you may see.
That's what I was about to say. I don't like when people pick on the person that comes dressed with the Tim's jeans, like look like they don't go to
don't
church.
Know him.
They don't have that church look. So even
and I'm in my head like, yo, I'm Christ all day. Don't get it caught up in what you may see. It's just happened plenty of times.
Yeah, like from that angle. You know what I mean? So normally the person that's dressed a certain way is actually looked upon like, all right, they going through struggles or they in bondage or they in some type of, you know what I'm saying? So, what they call it, profiling in the church.
Oh, yeah. I knew you was going to say that. Racial profiling.
Word is bomb. Like, for real, man. Actually,
yeah,
like, you're
right.
Spiritual profiling. And, like,
that's
you're
true.
You're judging about by the way I look or the way my outside character and appearance comes off.
Right.
Because some people, because I don't walk around and I don't talk the church talk.
The church.
I don't walk. You know that. You know the church language.
Lingo or speaking in tongues every 5-6 days.
Because, like, my thing is like this. On your everyday, you don't walk around, praise the Lord, sister, my brother. Like, you don't, that's not what you do on a regular. You talk regular. You know what I'm saying? So it's like almost, I don't like, it's not time to get an Oscar now when we come to church. And I talk about that, too. I don't like, I don't think God expects us to come to him in a false identity. Or an identity that we're mimicking, where we think that this identity seems more holier by doing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I believe, man, I believe you should be you, who you are. Like, be you. You know what I'm saying? Talk the way you talk. Pray the way you going to pray. Like, you don't have to pray the way that it, the way that when you go to church and you hear it, it doesn't have to be that way. And I believe that's how a lot of times we get caught in a certain box and we never go outside of it because we think that it all has to be done this way because we heard Deacon so-and-so pray that way with that certain tone and that certain sound. And if it's not that, it's not real.
I got you. I have another question. I'm going to switch it up a little bit. My question is, how can leaders get hurt? How do leaders get hurt usually?
You know how leaders get hurt? Leaders, I believe, get hurt by the ones. They get hurt by the ones. This is how I believe it happens. They overlook certain ones, right?
Mm.
And the ones they choose, those the ones that actually hurt them, the ones that they more so trust. And this is what I'm saying, because sometimes people are good at hiding their flaws. Some people aren't good at hiding their flaws, so when you first see them, the first impression of them is their flaw. So normally, immediately, you'll overlook them, and you'll pay more attention probably to the ones that you can't see their flaws, and they seem like they're running properly. So those are the ones that you'll probably build a little bit more relationship with and trust them more. But those be the ones that flaws are even more dangerous because once you connect to them and if you take the attention off of them for a moment, those are the ones that will bite you.
Well, my question is it you know how Jesus picked out his close followers and the ones he actually ministered to and all that stuff? Wasn't it the people that off of first hand you would not have necessarily trusted? He made friends with tax collectors who were very, a lot of times, malicious and greedy men. He made friends with prostitutes. He made friends with people that were ostracized in society. But a lot of times preachers pick people around, like you said, who they necessarily can't see their flaws. They kind of look at the perfect ones.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I believe that's how they wind up getting hurt, because what they look at and see as perfect becomes what's dangerous. And what the one who has the flaw is the one in the beginning that, if you accept me with my flaw, I know I can trust you and I'll never hurt you because you accepted me with my flaw from the door. You know what I'm saying? Just like a person who has been forgiven, like if a person has done a whole bunch in the world, they've done a whole bunch of mad stuff, crazy, and they're given a chance at redemption, when they get redemption, they'll have more compassion on other people who are in their situation or with as many flaws, more than a person who hasn't been redeemed from nothing or hasn't.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So I think I think that the person that has the flaws that come to church and they knew they was messed up and they caught in a whole lot of issues and everything, and a pastor or a leader looks past all of that and begins to take them under the wing with the flaw and gradually help them conquer those things that have been bound in them out. Those be the ones, I believe, that become more loyal than the ones who've been hiding their flaws the long time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. I have a little bit deeper, more controversial. Now we talked about how people can hurt people, but how about? And this question is kind of going to Mr. New York Giants. You still there?
Yeah.
Okay. How can or how does religion hurt people?
I think religion hurt people because it's more like a based instruction or based on how you're supposed to live compared to, let's say, I'm just a human being trying to live right and due to religion, normal basis, I'm looked upon, let's say, as a heathen or whatever I may do due to religion when I'm just trying to live right in a sense of my own daily living, which a lot of people don't do by religion no more. Well, we try not to live by religion, but a lot of people are stuck on just religion, which I believe is, let's say, instructions on how to live when that's not really the right way. I believe it's not. It seems like a cult. Religion is a cult.
Uh huh.
And those are things that's being followed as retrospect of compared to someone that feels like I don't follow a cult. I believe in me living according to, let's say, what's right or wrong, not so much on this base strict instruction on how you may say this is right or this is wrong.
Gotcha.
Okay. I think my opinion on religion, I think this is where the problem comes at, and this is just my point of view where it gets kind of bugged me. I think it gets awkward when religion feel like it's too happy to say no to you, but it dreads when it has to say yes.
Can you break that down a little bit more?
Say if when I'm saying no, when I say come up to you and you're doing something that our rule says you're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like religion would be happy to say do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
It's like if someone was telling on you and they happy that they can tell on you, it's not the point that, like me, when me and my brother, when he would get in trouble, I would feel bad. It's not like I wouldn't want him to get in trouble.
Yeah.
But then you got certain ones that they really, just like in church, if you get pulled in the bishop's office, there are people that are happy that you're in that situation.
Yeah, I see. That's a banging analogy. I like that analogy.
Now, I will say this. Now, look, at home, it's a whole different story, Jay. You got siblings getting the next sibling in trouble. You know, that was just fun in the house. That was fun. But on a grown note, yeah, as in the church, come on, if anything, I always say, us as brothers and sisters in the church, we should always try to rectify the situation before we even have to get to the higher person.
And I believe when you do that, that's when you start maturing. But I believe you stay a child when you're always happy to see your fellow brother or sister be in trouble. When you're too happy about them being exposed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're happy about that. You know what I mean?
That's just immature. That's some personal issue that person has. because they may feel like the more and more you in trouble, the more and more I may look good. So that's their own personal issue.
That's the problem in church. Everybody wants to magnify everybody else's fault so they can hide their own. Everybody got the magnifying glass on everybody else.
Uh-huh.
Pay attention to that. So long as you pay attention to that, I can do this.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And it, for real, and it, if you look at church in the whole, in all different type of situations you have, you got people that, it's something at this. I play at a Seventh-day Adventist church, right? And every so amount of years, they change pastors. They never have a pastor there for very long periods of time. So, because their whole focus is they want you to come to church for God. And when they feel as though you're getting too into the pastor, they'll switch the pastor. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's like, I believe even in church, man, we need to refocus what we're really there for. And I believe a lot of the man-made opinions of stuff and orders is what brings the majority of the issues of chaos in the church. I believe that's the problem. I believe in church it should be to a point where it's always about showing the love and helping your brother however you can out of whatever they're in. So my thing is like this. Y'all too, say we in the church and we in the church. And this is me. I'm saying this. I would rather cover you and talk with you than to expose you to get you messed up. And not only am I exposing you to mess you up, now I'm exposing you and messing others up that you was a blessing to. Because now it altered the perception of you to them.
I attribute in the truth.
Huh?
I said, you know, how there are, that was a good example of how, like, big name artists, gospel artists,
uh-huh.
How and they make, or big time preachers, when they make mistakes and they are basically outed with their mistake, a lot of times because the person who actually outed them put everybody else in jeopardy who actually seen that artist or seen that preacher as being, you know, really close to God or big in the faith. Because someone else outed them, now I'm looking at, hold on 1 second, we have another call falling in, hold on. Hold on. Hello? Caller?
Yes, peace. Matt, too.
Hey.
What's going on?
How are you, Matt?
Pretty good. Calling to see if y'all, what y'all building off tonight, y'all using myth or math. Which one?
we're basically talking about how the church may hurt and affect the saints, if it's possible. Like how people in religion may hurt other people in religion, and why they do that, and how they do that. Do you have any insight on that?
Well, so I said, y'all using myth or math? Which one y'all using?
Both, actually.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Tonight we want to come like this, Matt too. Like when you were in the religion that you're not in no more, when you were in church, right?
Mm-hmm.
What forms of hurt did you see take place with your own eyes? Whether it was a myth to you, or you can calculate it, use the math with it.
Put it. Well, I think. For the most part, it really was like you was just saying. You just saw a lot of personal you know, personal conflicts, you know, whether it be with, you know, people sleeping around or just kind of, you know, gossipy type stuff and, I don't know, you know, just more of that type of stuff.
Were you ever openly rebuked?
No, I never was.
Were you ever prophesied it to?
Yeah.
Now, when somebody prophesied it to you, in the case that if they were wrong, did that affect you in some type of way? Did it bother you?
Or were they right?
Just from the ones that I can remember, most of them were, you know, people saying, you know, God gonna use you and God got great things for you. Just more so of, that's pretty much most of the stuff that I type heard.
Yeah, a very general, broad.
Yeah. God, yep. You got great things coming. You know, God gonna use you. You know, so I just, you know, okay. You know, I mean, I bought into it.
So, okay, so my question to you is now that you have become enlightened, so to speak, and you more so aren't mentally lazy. Me and Jay actually had a conversation about this earlier. But you have stepped out of your comfort zone to learn something new. Now you're looking from the outside of it. How does it look to you? How does the church look?
Man, I mean, you know, one of the things, and that's deep, Deborah. But let me see if I, without being disrespectful, I certainly don't want to be disrespectful. But it seems so juvenile, for lack of a better word, like romper roomish. Like childish, like it's like you know, when you have kids, when you know, like at a certain age.
Before you continue, we always tell on this show that this is the place where you can say what you choose to say without being judged or being ridiculed. You know, this is the place because you can't go inside anyone's church and say what you're saying. So this is the time to say it. So don't feel as though you're being disrespectful, because you aren't, because we have spoke to you enough to know that, you know, you're not blatantly trying to be rude or blatantly trying to be disrespectful.
Yeah, and that's what I would say. If I could try to give you a visual picture of it, it's like you have like an older, what's that disease where you have like an older child, but they still got the mind of a, they older physically, but they still got like the mind of a 2-year-old.
Immature?
Well, but you know, it's a disease where.
Yeah, I know.
You know, yeah, but that's, yeah. You know, that's kind of, that's what I see, man. That's what I see now.
And do you think that type of vision, or that type of mentality that people have, do you think that actually affects people in a more so in a negative way or more so in a positive way?
I think ultimately in a negative way in this sense is because I think people sincerely are looking for, you know, not just the saving of their soul when they come there. They look for to find themselves. And so when they don't find themselves in that, that's frustrating. And so from that sense, it's more of a, it's frustrating, and I think that frustration then just plays itself out in little spits and spats in the church, you know, and stuff like that.
Oh, Yeah, I honestly never looked at it that way. I can see that being the reason why people gossip and people necessarily can't get along with other members of their church, because, like you said, they are actually looking for some type of place within that religion, and when they can't find it, they can't be idle.
Right.
So they go back to basically they basically go back to their instincts of going back to their childhood type of, you know, ways. You know, since I can't necessarily find a place, I'm going to pick on you.
Yeah.
It says the greatest fear people have is that of being themselves. They want to be someone else. They do what everyone else does, even if it doesn't fit where and who they are.
Yeah, and I actually read something before that was actually talking about why people logical, realistic thinking people resort to choosing very fringe religions, meaning that I am a typical logical person who lives my life normally, just like every other person, but I choose a religion that basically believes in things that aren't logical and things that aren't realistic. I choose that for myself because a lot of times they say because some people like to be a part of something. Some people like to feel important. Some people like to because they don't have identity. Religion gives them a sense of identity. And that's why those are some of the reasons why they say, you know, they choose certain things. But in the light of the conversation that we're having, a lot of times can that hurt people? Does it allow people to hurt other people?
Do you believe the problem is that people tend to take on the perception of others about them as their identity?
Well, me personally,
because they don't know who they are if they're like they don't know who they are by themselves, so they need other people to know who they are.
Well, this is what I would say about that. I haven't necessarily shed my light on any of this stuff because I've been asking the questions, but I've read somewhere where everybody is a little delusional, meaning in the sense that women think a lot of times that they are less attractive than what they really are. Men kind of overcompensate on their attraction, thinking that they're more attractive than what they are. You may look in the mirror and see something totally different than someone looking at you. Sometimes you may think of yourself being smarter than what you really are. Sometimes the opposite. So in some sense, everybody is a little bit delusional. Then it actually comes to religion. Religion is a huge factor in our society, in our world, in our life, because it basically tries to answer things that we necessarily can't answer. And it puts us in a position, some people, it puts them in a position where I can have some type of authority because I claim to know more, experience more, and feel more than you do. With that being said, if I have that type of control, if I have that type of authority, then it actually puts me in a position where I look at myself. I create this delusion about myself that other people can believe to establish some type of, position with myself. And a lot of times people need that to feel important. That's what I think.
One of the, can I jump in?
Yes, hold on 1 second. We have another caller. You can finish.
Okay.
Hello, caller? Caller?
Hello?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Okay, and you?
I'm doing great.
This is Jermaine's mother.
Oh, hey, Mom, how you doing?
Okay. I just want to call and say hi.
Oh, how you doing, Mom?
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were going tonight or not.
Yeah, we on.
Okay.
We on Sunday through Friday, Mom.
Oh, all right.
Sunday through Friday. I love you, though. I love you. And I always
love you
appreciate
too.
When you call and when you listen in on me.
I always do. Okay.
All right. I'll be there to see you tomorrow, Mom, when it's voting time.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right, go ahead. You can say it well.
Yeah.
We always love when his mom calls in.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. You can.
Got to cherish them times, bro.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm saying.
One of the, and I think one of the things, man, that I, from, like you said, once you step out and look from the outside, I always call it a view from on top of the pyramid. This idea of knowing the self, right? I don't think church and religion digs into that part, which I think initially that really is what, you know, humans come there for, to know the self.
Mm-hmm.
That was a famous African saying, it's on every temple, know thyself. So when they don't delve into that from a scientific perspective and just give you like a superficial understanding of who you are. One, you were born to Adam and Eve. Two, your nature, you fell from grace or whatever, you have a sinful nature. Three, you need a personal savior, right? And
uh-huh.
Then you need to live a life according to this, or you're going here or here. Now, that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Uh-huh.
And that really has, from a scientific perspective, is telling you absolutely nothing about the self.
Hmm. I always thought of, I'm not picking on any particular religion, but I always thought that, religion, doesn't matter what type of religion it is, I think it kind of takes you away from yourself.
It does.
Because basically the point of religion is to lose yourself or to actually kill yourself,
yes.
To actually take on the place of whatever that religion expresses to be God. And it's basically like lose yourself, become that belief so you can really find yourself. But that's kind of an oxymoron, because how can I find myself if I'm losing myself to be more like you? Then I'm not necessarily being me, I'm being you, because you're basically saying that you are it. I'm not. I'm basically broken and I need to be fixed. You are my medicine, and in order for me to be fixed, I have to become you to be fixed. Not necessarily saying that you can be you and still be fixed if you claim to be broken. What I believe what religion does is religion by default already says you're broken. By default, you're broken.
Right.
You're born into broke.
Right.
And what happens is it's their job to make you well and to make you whole and complete again.
And let me can I build off that, brother? Because I think you, and you're absolutely right, man. And that's why the if you look at the ancient African teachings and philosophy, they never told you were broke. Never. It's nowhere in African teaching and thinking that by nature you are broke. never. They say just the opposite. By nature, you are complete. And then they get into, you know, personalities to where you identify with your ego, and that's how you begin to get self-centered and things of that nature, you know, gluttony and lust and things of that nature, by identifying with your ego. But they never don't start with the premise that there's something wrong with you. They don't do it.
All right, and also just like the Muslim faith, they heavily teach that you must deny yourself to be closer to Allah. In that response, what you would have to do is follow these rituals, and through these rituals, you are losing yourself, dedicating yourself to this concept and idea. By doing that, it puts you in a position where you're vulnerable to listen to anyone who claims that they are speaking to the one who sent them. By doing that, you're basically vulnerable to do anything they say, which allows people to go and blow up buildings and do all these type of extreme things, because they lose themselves to become something else.
Okay. So what you're saying is you're saying that man is complete without religion. That's what you're saying, right? Or without God.
No, I wouldn't even bring that premise in there about the God thing. You don't need to. What they're saying is, based off what we can see the expressions of nature are, they just never, in other words, with them communing with nature and communing with each other, that thought never came to them that something wrong with you. you see the difference?
And what I would say is I'm saying that if I don't claim to be broken, then
you don't need
necessarily need something or someone to fix me.
Right.
So that's all I'm necessarily saying. I'm not saying that God can't necessarily or the belief in God or the belief in the Creator can't necessarily fix you, because if you do believe or you see yourself broken, then if God through your concept, if God is the one to fix you, then by all means get fixed.
Right, and I'm saying the same thing. That's right. That's right.
Let me ask you this question. Right now, if you was dropped in the middle of Baghdad, or you was dropped in the middle of Palestine, in a place where it's like some war, something's crazy, mass genocide is just taking place, all where you're dropped in the middle there, right? And you're seeing crazy stuff going all around, people getting killed, and your life is in danger too, and it's like crazy. Would you pray?
Are you asking me personally?
Yeah.
Or are you, that's just a general state question to everybody?
Anybody can answer it.
Since nobody's asking, would I pray? From where I'm at right now, I would say no. But I actually believe that if something is embedded in you, like for instance, I may say, "Oh my God,"
right?
But because I say, "Oh my God," I don't necessarily believe in a God. It's just an expression. It's something that
what you're saying is, if you was out in war and you was out in the midst of that, and it's dead people getting killed, and there's mad stuff going on, bombs blowing up, shots being fired, you're saying if you did pray, it would just be an automatic expression.
Yeah, well, with me personally, yes.
So it would just be something you would just say, just to be saying.
If I were to say it at all,
And I would answer it this way, brother. And like I said, what when you say pray, meaning like call out to say like Jesus save me or something like that, or somebody save me, the womb
save
me,
God save me, Jesus, however. If you're in the heat of that situation,
right,
and it's extreme now. This is a reality happening to you. It ain't no joking now.
Right, it's real deal.
People, it's real deal. You seeing your people, you know that's your boys, they getting killed. I mean, it's crazy. I'm asking you, would you pray?
Would you try God
in that situation? Would you give him, do you think, especially I'm asking Matu and the advocate, would you try it just because you did it before? Would you actually just do it to see if that could bring you out of that situation?
Well, let me say this. I think the scenario you gave actually has you know, more than one scenarios in it. Let me see if I can answer it this way. Let's say I was dropped into a situation where I found myself in a battle, and you, like you said, and your boys is being killed or something like that. What I would hope that I would do, and what I feel like I would do at this point, hell, I'd pick up the pistol or the gun if we at war, and start shooting.
No, I'm talking about you're doing that too. I'm saying you're surviving the best way you can. But
okay.
I'm saying in the midst of you doing whatever you can do, would you pray?
From what I understand, the you know, from praying because I've been in church, then I would answer that no too. No, I would not. From understanding prayer, like, you know, what I understand prayer to be, I would say no. The closest thing I probably would do to that, minister, is I'm sure I would attempt to commune with the ancestors. So that may be a form of prayer, though. You see what I'm saying? I guess, I'm trying to be as honest
as
possible.
So you would try to reach something higher than yourself?
Yes, I would. Yes. I would attempt to, yes.
You would attempt to.
Yes.
Now, me, like I said, me personally, again, just because I may necessarily... Let's say I'm going to call out Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. Just because I call out Dorothy doesn't mean that Dorothy's story is
the truth. You know what? No.
Listen,
go ahead, man. Listen, drop that Dorothy stuff, man. No, for real, drop that Dorothy stuff. I'm talking, this is real talking. I'm talking about, man.
Listen, it's head flying.
I'm talking about it's mass genocide taking place here, man. It's dead children around. You ain't thinking about no Dorothy from the Wizard of Oz. I'm talking about would you pray to God?
Listen. In the sense of Christianity, in the sense of how I was raised, I would revert back.
I believe you will pray.
I wouldn't revert back to that.
Me personally, I'm telling you that I would not go to the death of me saying that, you know what, God, if you're real, take me out of this situation because I don't want to be here. I don't think, and I truly don't believe that I would actually do that. Because I do not believe, nor do I think that works. Now, I may catch myself in the sense of resorting back to something familiar. But just because I resort back to something familiar doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Right.
Listen, what I'm saying is, this is what I'm saying. Regardless of how you try to fix it up or make it sound from little cherries on top, make it water it down, whatever. You, in that situation, if you're faced with the next second,
whoa!
You might not be here. You may be dead and gone. I'm saying that I believe you will pray.
Yeah, of course you believe that.
I hear you, but listen.
But minister,
I hear you.
You know what I think? I think he's saying this, and I think the reverting to, in other words,
I'm
first
not
of
saying
all,
you go
that's
back
instinctual,
to...
right? It's instinctual. I think any that's just natural instincts to want to survive, right? I mean, when you add all of that stuff in the mix, who wants? Nobody just want. Most people don't just want to die, minister. So I think from an instinctual perspective, you want to feel comforted. You want to feel like you got strength in that particular situation. So there may be a lot of different rituals that one would engage in the heat of that, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you're going to go. I'm not saying that in that moment you got time to go back to a Sunday morning service and speak in tongues and do all that like you did. You know, I'm not saying that. I'm saying in that moment you would pray to the point where you hope that by doing that, the situation or the circumstance will change.
Yeah, and I actually wouldn't disagree with that. If
I wouldn't
disagree with that. No,
I wouldn't disagree with it either. My thing is, just because, or if I may resort back to something that
don't
may
mean
be
it's going to change, right?
Doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work.
No, I'm not saying that it would or wouldn't, but I'm saying you would try it.
Yeah. But again, miss, I think most people, just instinctual, man, don't nobody want to die. So, I mean, you going to muster the fight or flight instinct, you know, some may run. Some may go down and look for some type of inner strength to, you know, to gather themselves and think logically and try to get out of it.
For instance, like, there may be some people that
because
was raped.
At that time, you wouldn't call on no scholar that you got information from who you feel enlightened you during that time.
No, that has nothing, because I don't look at a scholar as a source of help. I never did look at a scholar as a source of help.
It's what
I look at scholars as a source of knowledge.
It's nothing else in that situation that you're going to resort back to hoping that the God that you've never laid your physical eyes on or touched, that he will hear you.
No, I think, minister, and I think you're pushing it now, minister. You're pushing it a little bit. Yeah, you're pushing the envelope now a little bit.
I'm saying it like this. Why would you do it then?
Listen. Like I was going to say earlier, what happens is a lot of times, let's say, for instance, I was a person that grew up in a very non-believing, atheistic environment. I'm not going to call on God no matter what you say.
Right.
Not going to call on God. But let's say I actually grew up in a time where I believed in lots of gods.
Hold up.
Wait.
I
believe
no,
lots
I gotta
of gods.
Stop you right here.
I may call on lots of gods.
Because there is someone that could have been an atheist and they in a situation that's crazy where they'd be like, Lord, if you are real, get me out of this situation.
But my thing is it possible for them not to call on?
No, it's possible, but it's still possible, and I guarantee you it has happened. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. If you're real, or that child is on the deathbed.
But I guess here's the math and science to that, though, minister. Even if you do call on it, that don't mean what you're calling on it for. One,
right,
happens.
Well, how about the atheist that tried it and prayed,
right,
and their child turned around and got better, and their child and their was ill.
Okay, but see, but let me give you the same scenario. Do you know that there's people, I'm sure, who have been in accidents and actually died, and as they were crashing into a truck or something or going over a cliff, or even in an airplane. People that have crashed in an airplane, you don't think they was praying, some Jesus and God save me?
Yeah.
So,
but listen, but there's people who survive plane crashes.
Okay, but what I'm saying, so what, that's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is,
everybody going to die, though.
The end of the premise, that's what I'm saying. So you're talking
about
the end of the premise.
Actually died and did pray.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but there's people that actually prayed and did live.
So who, which one?
So
what's the end result?
So then it comes down to the question of, it comes down to the question of,
wait.
It comes down to the question of, who is God really listening to?
Right.
Is he listening
to the ones who died or the ones who live?
Well, listen, how about if it's your time to go?
Okay, well then, so. You answer the question then.
But listen to what I'm saying, though. But then, if you read in the Bible, you know what I'm saying? Even when Hezekiah prayed, and he was the word was speaking to him that he was about to die, and he prayed, turned his face to the wall, and God gave him 15 more years to live.
Yeah, and I'm quite sure throughout history there are other religious books that claims the same thing. So whose God is real?
Yeah, it's like he's trying to.
Whose
play...
God do you call on? Because
like
evidently their God worked for them.
The scenario I gave y'all,
you hedge your bets.
So who God you call on? You gonna call on God?
Yeah, but you hedge your bets, man. You hedge your bets.
You would call.
No, I'm saying you, but you hedge your bets. I mean, it's a you're looking for a win-win. It's almost like a cop out. You're saying, well, if he died, then it was his time. Well, it's almost like what people say when people don't get healed, right? They say, oh, it wasn't your time to be healed.
Doesn't everybody die?
Yeah.
Like, no one lives forever, all right? But prayer has...
No. Sorry, I can't. You can't say that because there are people in the Bible and there are people in other religions and other traditions and beliefs that never did die.
What I'm saying is that prayer doesn't work. And there's millions of people that will just... that will not agree with what you're saying.
See, this is my thing about it.
You know what I mean? It's millions.
Wait. Listen. Whoa. In order for people, just listen. I really need for you to listen. In order for people,
I'm just saying. I hear what you're saying, but like you're
no, you're not hearing because I haven't even said anything yet.
Because you're really what you're saying in a nutshell is that prayer doesn't work and it's not real.
No, I'm not.
No,
if you just listen to what I'm saying to you, then you would understand.
No, I don't think he's saying that.
No, he's saying it.
Oh, okay.
No, can you just listen to what I'm saying?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead around the mountain.
This is my thing. In order for people to observe, and to prove something, if something is actually probable to happen, likely to be true, always to happen, they have to do tests. They have to do tests in very strict environments where these things can be proven to be right. Now, if a particular prayer worked, then a particular prayer needs to work in every kind of situation, meaning that I know the sun is going to rise tomorrow, and I know that because that's all that has been happening. I know that if I actually throw in 10 bars of soap inside a pool, it's going to float every single time. If I throw in 10 big things of metal, I know that it's going to sink. In the same measure, I have to do praying with. Now, if I do that under a controlled environment and I actually pray for something and prayer works every time, then prayer does work. But if prayer works just as much as chance, then
right.
You can't necessarily pinpoint it
right.
That this prayer works. Because you don't have any proof, because sometimes it happens, sometimes it don't. And then the times that it doesn't happen, what you say is, okay, well, maybe it wasn't your time.
Right.
Or so basically what people usually do is they they take the role on, okay, if it doesn't work, it's because God permitted it not to
right,
work because it's
right,
a higher
grace right,
because,
right.
because of it. That's not proving something works.
Right.
That's not the proof you need, because in every other situation, you actually measure stuff
right,
by
Mother, are you praying with faith or are you praying or are you doubting?
Excuse me?
Doubting. The Bible says when you pray, you shouldn't have doubt in your heart. When you
well,
pray.
I think what he's doing now is setting up another excuse that if it don't come true, that
so,
means he was doubting.
So this is, in a nutshell, what you're saying then, this is what you're saying. This is really what you're saying, because you're saying that prayer doesn't work. You're saying prayer is not real. That's what you're saying.
Okay, no, this is what I'm
no,
actually
no,
saying.
Man. I mean,
listen, hold on, listen, to answer your question, there were the disciples who followed Jesus, right? We all know.
Let me ask you.
We all know from the scriptures.
I'm not talking to Brother Matthew right now. Does prayer work?
If you put it in context, this is how I will put that in context, man. For instance, if a person say they're praying for a peace of mind, right, and if they get up, and let's say they went down on their knees, you know, feeling like they didn't have a peace of mind, and when they came up, they felt like they have a peace of mind. Well, I don't have no right to tell that person that prayer didn't work for that. So I think you do have to keep it in context. You know, you just can't. I don't think it's just no willy-nilly across the board. Because from what the brother's saying, from that perspective, right, you can't have it both ways where saying, oh, well, we prayed that God would heal your leg and it didn't happen. Either you didn't have faith or it wasn't time. I mean, come on, man.
All right, so what I'm asking you, so if those are excuses that Christians use when it doesn't work, what I'm asking you, straight across the board, is prayer real? Does it work?
I think you would have to ask that to somebody who, you know, who's praying for something and they said it worked for them like that. See, you asking me to answer that, and I couldn't answer that like that. I would have to answer it the same way that the brother is answering.
All right, well, I'll fight. What to you?
Do it work to you? Huh?
Does prayer work with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe in prayer.
Okay.
Well, then it works.
Well, then it worked for you.
And what I was going to say, when it comes to the belief factor, the disciples actually did not believe because they didn't even know who Christ truly was. And in the same breath that they didn't know who Christ was, they were actually healing people. So in a lot of cases, belief isn't necessarily the key factor because people were actually healing people and didn't even believe who Jesus was. Didn't believe in the name of Jesus. So in that regard, sometimes belief is not a factor.
And as for me, brother, I don't do that. I don't get down on my knees and pray like that. I don't do that. So
you pray to the ancestors, though, right?
Actually, I don't even pray to them. No,
but
I don't pray to the ancestors.
Some people that's involved in what you're involved in, don't they pray or like you know have? You know, talk to the ancestors and
but see,
it's like
but,
okay. Well, hold on, wait.
But from
first,
from,
you have to define prayer.
Yeah.
Are you referring to prayer as a petition, asking for something that needs to be answered
man,
or
I'm,
fixed?
I'm talking communication.
Of course that works because I can communicate to anybody whether they're real or not real.
Right, and I think it's more of a sense. Okay. It's like a culture, man. It's just like the church culture. It's like as part of the belief system in the African traditional, you hear what I said, though, didn't you now? I said the belief system is that you can commune with the ancestors. I said belief system.
Okay.
Not that you really can, but because you believe in it, then you would talk to them whether or not they're talking back to you or not. But if that belief helps you to then carry out something, you see what I'm saying? So it's almost like a cultural, how would you say, artifact that helps you to, you know, create a certain character and personality to you. But here's the key word, though, bro. Belief.
It's called a placebo effect.
Right.
That's what it's called. Prayer or the religion is working as the placebo.
Right. Now, and it don't mean for one second, brother, that I talk to anybody.
Okay.
Literally.
Aaron, could you, I need the definition of placebo. Could you give me that definition?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hold on. I'll give you the, instead of paraphrasing, I'll give you the actual definition of it.
And Minister, I think that works in, that actually is where the modern day religions patterned that after. I think what has happened now is more people, and we're not talking about whether they is talking to them or they ain't talking to them. I don't want to get into that. But that's where modern religions got that from, too. Talking to Jesus, you know, talking to this one, Buddha, and this and that. They just patterned that after you know, what other religions had done.
Do you meditate?
Huh?
Do you meditate?
Yes.
When you meditate, mentally, do you go to a certain place in your meditation? Or is there a certain place that you try to reach in your meditation?
Yeah, actually, you try to reach no place.
A place.
Meaning you quiet, the purpose of meditation is actually to quiet the mind, to make it shut up, so you ain't going nowhere.
All right, but you do that. What is the purpose of quieting the mind and to shut everything down? What's your purpose or reason for doing it?
One of the physical reasons in meditation has to do with the actual
stress.
Physical right to get your physical body in a certain state, right? A nirvana of peacefulness, the consistent breath, the consistent blood flowing throughout the body. So it's a science attached to that.
All right, and just to answer your question, a placebo is a medication with no active ingredient or procedure without any medical benefit. A placebo is often used as a control in one group of people in order to study the effectiveness of an experimental drug or treatment in another group of people by comparing the results. For instance, let's say someone claims to have a headache. I'm a doctor. I give someone medicine to cure their headache or to cure the pain. After they take the medicine, they say, you know what, I feel a whole lot better now. In actuality, the medicine didn't have any ingredients or anything to cure that headache. But because the person believed that the medicine was the cure, they were cured.
Right.
That's what a placebo effect is.
You know what else, man? Let me throw something else in there, y'all. And Dr. Amos Williams did an entire DVD on that. He was a psychologist. And this is deep, man. Do you know they say, like, people with multiple personalities?
Uh-huh.
That this one guy, this was just the one that he used as an example, had about six personalities. One of them was allergic to orange juice. And when he would drink orange juice inside of that personality, they had him in a lab, he would actually break out with welts on his arm and stuff when he was in that personality. But when he was in the other personality that wasn't
allergic to orange juice,
he wouldn't break out.
Mm-hmm. It was another experiment. I'm not necessarily sure on who actually did the experiment, but it was an experiment with somebody that had a split personality as well. Not necessarily split personality. This person suffered brain trauma.
Mm.
And prior to, this person was a devout believer.
I believe it was Christianity, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. But they were a devout believer in it. They had this trauma, and they lost their memory. In that, they became a totally different person, and they no longer believed. No longer. It wasn't in them. They did not believe at all. So a lot of people use that. A lot of people use that as an example of, well, what believes? Is it your soul and your spirit that believes, or is it your mind that believes? Most, you know, and I would basically, I wouldn't even answer that. I would leave that up to whoever, right, you know, wants to answer it themselves.
There was another story along those lines that I had read about, where some Christian missionaries had went over to some island or something, and, you know, in their missionary work, the first thing they do when they hit an island is they take and translate the Bible into their language. And ultimately they end up having to leave because they wouldn't buy into the concept of hell, because they, in their language, they had no concept of hell. So they could never get them to buy into there being one.
That's cool. I never even heard of that before. But also another thing, I honestly believe prayer works. I believe prayer works. I believe, and not only that, but I believe whoever you pray to works. I also, and I'm not saying this to be funny, but I also believe good luck charms work as well. Mm. I believe people who actually put special socks on before a game, I believe it works. And the reason why it works is because you want it to work.
Right.
And if you want something to work bad enough, whether it doesn't work all the time,
right,
you will totally be biased to
right.
the opposition of the times that it does work. And if that's what you care to do, then of course it works for you. I'm more so referring it on a more realistic, natural, logical manner.
Universal.
Because if prayer actually works in the sense of how some people believe it to work, then prayer will work under any circumstance and under
right.
any condition.
That's a good point, bro. Yeah.
You said it will always work, right? If it worked once, it should always work. Every time it's used, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I do believe prayer works. I mean, and I can speak from experience. I used to pray, and when I actually did pray, certain things came to pass. Other things didn't, and the things that didn't, I justified the reasons why they didn't.
Right. Now that's real, man, because I have the same experience. Something.
But I mean, prayer did work for me at times. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I can say that. So did a lot of other things.
I'm gonna give you another.
I'll
give you another example too. Sometimes, not even praying, but being in a desperate situation, things have happened where I needed something where I didn't pray, and it did happen. I'll be like, man. I mean, that came right on time, but I had never prayed for it. But the need was there, and it did come.
And then I would also interject. A lot of times, I'm not saying all the time, but a lot of times, people, especially our culture, we usually pray because of the necessity of what we need. That's usually why you find church people praying.
Yeah.
Church people don't necessarily pray for communication. Of course,
mm-hmm.
it happens. Of course, it's true, and it happens a lot. But when church people, especially black church people or very fundamental believing charismatic Christians, when we pray, it's usually based on a necessity or based on a want. And the reason why we pray in that manner is because of our conditions. We don't have, so we pray.
Right.
Now, when it comes to a position where someone actually accumulates
all of the things that they actually need, the less they pray. Once I acquire some type of wealth, the less I pray for things, the more I may start having conversations. But the less I pray for things, because I don't necessarily have to pray anymore. I got them. What am I praying
right.
for?
Right.
Yeah.
Drake actually said something, and I usually don't take the words of a rapper, but it makes sense to me. In his song, he said that he actually prays. He will pray for something, and as soon as he finished praying, he'll go right to the store and buy it. And honestly, I actually think that's profound. You know why I think that's profound? Because I don't necessarily look at prayer the way I used to look at prayer. I look at prayer in the sense of I am conversing with myself. I'm talking to myself to basically reevaluate what I need, what's important in my life. And I may say, you know what, God, I need this car, I need this car, I need this car. And the more and more I say that, the more and more I realize, do I really need this car? What's going to happen if I can't afford this car? Does my budget fit this car that I really, really need? And it kind of makes me reevaluate things because I'm taking the time to actually pay attention to what I think I need. And I think prayer could be a very, very, very positive thing that people do because it can allow you to reevaluate things in your life if you use it that way. And I believe prayer is more beneficial that way. And I don't believe that it can be a letdown that way. And no matter how much of a Christian you are, I don't care. If something allows you to question your faith because you didn't get it, maybe I didn't have enough faith. I think that could be very, very detrimental to some people, and it can make them lose their faith.
Mm.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm going to tell you, me, and it's just my opinion. If you look at God as the Father, I just look at it like this. When your child asks you for something, you don't give your child everything that he wants or desires. And that's just from the human perspective. You don't give your child everything that it asks you. You tell it no. You say no. You say yes. You know, that's just my point on it.
Yeah, and that's true too. What I would have to say to that is if my child was begging for his or her life and they were in the sick bed and I actually had the authority and the power and the will to make them better. As a father, I'm going to make them better.
But if that's the case, then if you're saying that, then that means everybody will be living forever because you would never – I mean, everyone would live forever if you had that power. No one.
I'm talking about my child.
No, but I'm saying if you had the power to do that, your child would live forever, and so would you.
No, because my child can basically die right there at the scene, I'm talking about praying.
No, I'm saying, but you said if you had the power – your child is asking. Your child is on the deathbed. You said,
child is asking. Yes.
Yeah, you're going. But if you had the power to do that, your child would live forever because you would never see your child die. You would just keep making it live forever, and yourself also.
But you know what, Minister? I think I've said this on here before. I think with the approach like that, we tend to keep trying to subcontract some work out to somebody that ain't theirs to keep from doing it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, like, there ain't no reason for us three to pray that mass incarceration of black men stop. Or if we do pray then we need to get up and go find out about the justice system, how that happens, the history of it, and then put a strategy together to deal with it. I don't think we can just pray and then walk away from that.
Yeah, and I'll also just,
yeah.
Dad, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I also think that something that that the church I attend Bishop actually said one time. He said, "Why in the world is someone that I can actually help? I hear their prayers. They're telling me what they want from God. They're saying that." You know, I don't have too many pairs of clothing, and they're praying. They're asking God to bless them, and
you don't have to pray for that. Give it to them.
Exactly, and that's what I actually think that
somebody hungry. Don't pray if you go out and you go out in the street and there's somebody out there hungry. You don't just be like, "Oh Lord, feed them," and you got the means to feed them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly, and that's what I was basically trying to.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But then again, then also, along with your prayer and help, you can help that person, like, Lord, you know, help them in their situation that they can get out of this situation that they don't, you know what I mean, remain in a constant place of needing food, but that they can actually begin to do something for themselves.
And that's right. But check this out. And I said this to my mom a long time ago. And I believe this 100%. And I'm sorry if I offend anybody. I apologize if anybody will listen to this back, listen to this program back again. I apologize if I offend people. I believe religion works mostly to people, like I said, who are in need. And a lot of times, the reason why it works for inner city black people. Is because a lot of times it cripples us. I believe religion cripples us to the most, to the highest power, and I'm going to tell you why it cripples us.
It cripples because
we are very, 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 very lazy people. And the reason why I say that is because religion gives us a sense of we don't have to necessarily work at something ourselves because God gives us the power to fix stuff. Basically, we are relying on something to give us something that we have already. But we say, well, you know what? You don't have to worry about it because God's going to fix it. God's going to make a way. God's going to do this. God's going to do that. Instead of you getting off of your butt and doing it yourself.
No, that's real, brother.
Why?
That's real talk.
The reason why I actually believe a lot of successful people, and I'm not talking about white person in color. I'm talking about white person in mentality because you have a lot of black white people. And the reason why I say a lot of white people are actually successful is because they don't rely on religion.
They do not.
Their success.
They do not.
They rely on their individuality to actually make it somewhere. And they give no excuses.
Yeah.
None whatsoever. If they fall, it's because of them. It's not because of some demonic spirit that's basically
right.
holding them back.
Right.
And if they actually obtain something, it's not because they prayed so hard and prayed
right.
so hard and prayed so hard and it actually happened one day. No, they got off their butts and they did something for themselves.
No,
now,
that's
I'm
real
not
talk,
saying
bro.
It's wrong to congratulate you know, God and say, God, I thank you. You know what I'm saying? Because I do believe that people should. I think that if you believe in something, you know, congratulate, the creator who gave you the ability to do stuff yourself.
Yeah, well, see, that's my thing is, when I do stuff, the things that I do, I mainly thank God for the breath and the actual time to still be alive to accomplish things. Like, it's not like I expect God to make my moves for me, but I thank God for me still breathing to still be here to provide for my family. I thank God for my arms not be. I thank God for me not, being sick, still being healthy, being able to do. I thank God for those places. For, I thank God for the root of things.
And no, no, and that's cool. That's cool, and that's a good thing. What I just don't like and disagree with are people who actually look for miracles. For instance, they think that getting their car paid is a miracle. They think getting
right.
their mortgage paid is a miracle.
Getting a check
oh,
in the
Lord,
mail.
He blessed me. He gave me a miracle. And in the very basis of what a miracle means, that's a total contradiction. But to put that aside, to put all that aside, I actually believe that it's so ignorant for people to believe that they are waiting for a miracle for their bills to get paid instead of going out there working and getting their bills paid.
Well, one thing, brother, I'd add to what you're saying is that there have been studies, psychological studies, and surveys and things of that nature, to where they have profiled, you know, the black believer, right, in religious beliefs. And this is not just with Christianity, be with Islam and other things of that nature, when that is their worldview. One, it talks about what they have in common, pattern recognition. I've told you all about that. One, they're illiterate. I'm not saying everybody who believes in religions is illiterate, but this is just a common profile of those types. They're illiterate. They have a very low
education
levels.
Background.
Yep. They are 98, I think it was like 98% of them are in poverty, but underneath the poverty line, right? And there was some other, and this was actually done by a black organization. I wish I could recall the study. And so it just kind of showed you the profile, that just adds to what you're saying, the profile of blacks who get into that religion. Let me say one other thing. When you was talking, man, something came to me. Y'all know the hymn, Wade in the Water?
Uh-huh.
Do y'all know where that came from?
I know it came back during slavery times.
Check this out, man. Now, when we sang that today, and the thing, God going to trouble the water, wade in the water. Do you know where that hymn came from, man? It was from slaves who were revolting and trying to get away. And it was code language for the slaves to when they got to a certain point, to get in the water. Wade
mm-hmm.
in the water meant this, because when they came with the dogs, they couldn't pick up the scent because they were in the water.
Mm.
Think about that. Now, put that in that context. What the hell does that have to do with heaven or hell or any of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Say, what's it? Wade in the water, wade in the water. That's saying stay in the water. God's going to trouble the water. What he's saying is from you being in that water, it throws off, the dogs can't find your scent.
And it's crazy to me, because my grandparents, they're not living anymore, but my grandparents, they lived in Virginia, and they actually was around during the time of slavery. And I'm going to tell you how they used to speak, literally. I'm not even exaggerating. Every single time they would refer to a Caucasian man, they first would say the man, right? They would call him the man. And they would literally, I kid you not, they would put their heads down and they would say, this is exactly what they would say, you don't ever talk back to the man. You don't do that now, because he knows what's best. And they believed that. And the reason why they believed that was because of their condition and their faith. And their faith said, if you follow the one who's in charge of you, God will bless you.
Yeah.
And they literally believed that. You don't question a man. You don't question him. No, you don't do that. Because if you do that, you are being disobedient, and God is not going to bless you. And with that type of mentality, slaves would not have tried to free themselves.
No. There's a movie, Sankofa, you brothers can get right on YouTube. If y'all ain't doing nothing tomorrow or something, you can, I think it's right on YouTube called Sankofa. And they'll show you that specifically, you know, when the Africans were introduced to that stuff and what it did to them, the belief systems.
And where they got it.
And where they got it.
Sankofa.
Well, it's crazy because even though we kind of, well, we didn't necessarily stay away from the topic, but I think this is a lot of ways that religion and people in religious beliefs can actually hurt people, because slave masters actually did have religious beliefs and backed up their religion, backed up their beliefs and their teachings through their religion. And that actually did hurt people. And it not only hurt one generation, it hurt many generations. Religion can hurt. People do hurt. And I don't necessarily believe that belief or religion always hurts people. I believe that hurt people hurt people. And some hurt people use religion to hurt people. So,
do the minister put us on mute?
I'm not sure if he's still there or not. Jay? No, he actually isn't there anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
he didn't say bye.
He didn't say bye at all. I'm guessing that his phone probably died. I'm hoping that his phone probably died. Like I said, I always enjoy speaking with you and hearing views on things, because usually a lot of times it's good to hear someone coming from a neutral point of view, necessarily coming from a biased point of view. I think a lot of times we can learn from people who have neutral point of views or opposing point of views. It's kind of difficult for us to learn and grow if we are always surrounded. We surround ourselves around people who think like us and believe.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. You're absolutely right. And so that's, and like, you know what? I think what the message that is taken out is that we really all should be men and women of study.
Yes,
I mean ferocious studiers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just that alone, provides the potential for growth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice, that is probably something that we do the less of is study.
Yes.
I don't need that junk.
It's so true. And I don't know, growing up, I don't know how many times I've actually heard that from close family members. You don't know what you're talking about. That just doesn't make any sense. And the reason why it doesn't make any sense is because you are someone said this to me and it stuck with me. You are a lazy you're mentally lazy. And I think that's so true. A lot of people are mentally lazy.
What's worse than an ignorant Negro is a Negro who's arrogant in their ignorance.
True indeed. True.
Not only are they ignorant, they arrogant with it.
It's so true.
You do get a chance to hear it all. That's my message. I said, what y'all talk about, man? Y'all use a myth of faith. And one of the things from just studying and stuff like that, I always tell people, I said, listen, the Bible, from my opinion, is made up of three different things. And this will be the same with the Quran and most religious texts. They're a mixture of things. A lot of them have history in it, human history, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have mythology in it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them even have a little science in them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, can you decipher which is which?
Yes.
Because if you can't decipher which is which, you could be reading these texts wrong.
This,
especially
like you said,
if you get in the science mixed up, you say, what is meant to be mythology, you call it science.
Exactly. And you said something before, and I took it to heart. You said this book is not a science book,
right,
and you can't use it to answer scientific questions.
You can't do it because it's not.
Just like we had a discussion, and I mean it really got heated, and we were talking about homosexuality, and
mm-hmm.
I basically said that the Bible has six scriptures pertaining to same sex relationships, and I said the reason why. And what I asked first, I said, do you know why the Bible only has six when it has 32,000 script, 32,000, I believe, scriptures or something in it? Do you know the reason why it only has six? It's because it's not a sex book.
Right.
It's not something to where you hold up as evidence to learn about sex.
Sexuality, right.
Yes.
That's right.
It's not that type of book.
Right.
So you can't necessarily base sexual orientation on a book that wasn't made for that. And
right.
I mean that was profound to me.
Yeah, and then I think you're absolutely correct. So what you can do, what happens is if you study in any particular subject, go find all the knowledge you can on that and then mesh it with that and then see what you come up with. That's really, you know, how you move in consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say, okay, give me all the information on it. You see what I'm saying? Or much as I can muster up, or much as I can research up. And then I'm gonna refrain from drawing a conclusion or giving a viewpoint or a worldview on it until I get done devouring all of the information. Then I'll get back with you.
I wish people did that. I really, really wish that people actually did that. But it's hard to find people in such position as pastors, preachers, teachers, even some scholars to even take up that as a reality of it. A lot of times they don't necessarily do that, you know. I was talking to Jay one time, and I said, what's different from religion and science? Science's purpose and science's job is to prove itself wrong. That's
mm-hmm.
what the purpose of science is. Science whole agenda is to prove itself wrong, because by proving itself wrong, it limits or it eliminates all of the wrong answers to get the right one.
Right.
But religion, what religion does is by default, it's biased to its own logic.
You can't,
so
yeah.
It always backs itself up. It
right.
doesn't necessarily try to prove itself wrong to get the right answer.
And if you notice, man, when you talk with someone, and this has nothing to do with any particular belief, but that's coming from, when you're dialoguing with them and their formula for drawing conclusions is based off of that, the more you let them talk, the more they tangle themselves up in knots.
Of course. Of
I mean, they
course.
Just, if you just let them go, the more they talk, the more crazier they sound or non-connected is their thought.
To reality.
You know what I'm saying? Right.
Yes. So indeed.
That's what we have to do, man. But I'm gonna tell you something, man, and that's why I was like telling the minister stuff. And he got off the phone, but I was gonna challenge him. I was gonna say, minister, and I can just from hearing him talk, I already know he don't do it. And that's
mm-hmm.
this. He does not study concepts.
I don't think a lot of people study concepts.
Right. He don't study the history of concepts. And I will challenge him to do that. On any concept or anything that he's going to talk about, study that concept, the history of it, where it came from. We're not talking about drawing any conclusions, whether it's right or wrong. Just study it. Study where it came from.
Man, that right there alone, I think, would kind of force you to put yourself in a very uncomfortable place. And I think uncomfort mentally, I think, can be very, very healthy at times, because what it does is it challenges you to step out of your concept of reality.
Yeah.
Because for instance, it's bugged out to me, because I used to be like this and think like this. Someone would say, "Well, how do you know Santa Claus isn't true? Santa Claus can actually go around the world and deliver gifts and fit inside chimneys." And I say, "Well, that's impossible. That's impossible. No man can actually do that." And then they say, "Well, what is the likelihood of snakes talking, hands, inanimate objects actually writing on walls, people living in enchanted forests with magical apples, people actually speaking to gods and all that stuff?" And I said, "That's real." And I'm like, and they say, "How can that be real, but one man can't go around flying giving out gifts?"
Right.
And for a long time, I couldn't understand that until I stepped out of my comfort zone to look at it, like you said, from on top of the pyramid.
The pyramid, right. A view from on top of. Well, because when you go, like when you go to them, they're so massive, from whatever side of it you're looking at it, that's the only side you can see. If you walk up to it, I mean, that's the only side, that literally, that's all you can see is right there, what's in front of you. But from the top of it, you can see all of the angles.
Mm.
But, you know, and like with my youngest son, I was telling him, and now you just instinctually, when I think I told you guys this story, and it's, you know, he said, "Man, to heaven, you ain't gonna go to heaven, man." I said, "Well, where's that at, man? Do you know where it's at? You got the address?" "Man, ain't no address." "Well, you, and all I was doing is just trying to make him think, right? That's it."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I said, "Well, man, hell is over there in that dumpster." Do you know, instinctually, you know what he did? He went over there and opened up the... "Man, ain't no hell in..." I said, "Okay, now why would you think critical now? What in you made you go test that out when you just told me I ain't going to heaven? And you ain't never, you don't know the address, you don't know how many miles it is?" "Dad, you crazy. But see, all I was trying to get him to do, I wasn't trying to get him to deny either one. But you think critical like that all the time. Now, when I say something, you want to go check it.
Yeah,
he gonna go check what I say.
So true. Like, and I use,
he go check it.
So true. And I use this example all the time. I say it's very, very easy for you to believe. I ask, you know, close friends of mine. I say, "Hey, if I told you that I bought a new dog, would you believe me?" They say, "Yeah." Straight off the bat, they would say, "Yeah." And then I ask them why. "Why do you believe me?" "Because a dog is actually something that exists, something that people actually see every single day. And it's not necessarily far-fetched that somebody would actually have that, and it's not far-fetched for me to obtain a dog."
Right.
Okay. So then I say, "Yo, you know what? In my backyard right now, I got a dinosaur." And they'd be like, "Yeah, right."
See?
"Well, let me ask you this. Why is it very impossible for you to believe that I have a dinosaur?" "Because they've never seen a dinosaur. They never, and it's not necessarily typical for someone to go out and buy dinosaurs. But
Why, just like you said, why don't you use that same type of critical thinking?
See, that's the hypocrite, and that's the hypocrite. You know, I was telling the same thing. If you, any, you know, Christian or Muslim or any of them, when it comes to natural things, like you say, you've got two surgeons in front of you. One who's been through 20 years of medical school for heart surgery, and the other one who has faith that he can do open heart surgery. Which one are you going to choose?
So true.
You see?
So true.
It's a no-brainer. Not one of them. You can go line up the bishops. Now, you might get one out of a 50. I mean, the deepest bishops, the deepest nuns, the deepest faith-based believing, not one, and they know it. None of them would choose the one talking about he got faith that he can do an open heart surgery. Not one of them.
But when it comes to religion, that's when all reality and logical thinking comes to a halt.
But actually, yeah, that's right. That's right. But when it comes to the natural, well, hey, just use your faith. He said he can do it. You don't want to play
exactly.
That game. Yeah, they don't
exactly.
Want to play that game with their heart.
Exactly. So true. And this is actually what someone said. I think it was Humes, if I'm not mistaken. Extraordinary claims needs extraordinary evidence.
Mm.
So if I am claiming something that's extraordinary, I'm going to need extraordinary evidence to prove that.
You know what? I don't ever say this to a lot of particularly black Christians and Muslims and stuff, but this is a matter of fact. Do you know, man, the stuff that they gave us to believe in, they don't even believe in that shit.
I totally agree with that.
These is the ignorance. Now, we gave them this shit, and we don't even... Don't they see we deal with science and man's ability and what we going to build and what we going to control? They gave that shit to us, man, and they don't even believe it themselves.
But see, we don't look that far into things because we rely on belief, religion, and faith to do the work for us.
But it's killing us, man. We're the children of the planet. I mean, we're the juveniles of the planet, man. And everybody can see it. I mean, it's just evident, man, that we're like the non-thinkers. And it plays out in our interaction with everybody, in our place in society, you know, wherever you find us. You know, we're at the bottom.
And it's so crazy. I just thought about this just now. All right. Black people, before President Obama actually got elected, whether you agree with his views or not, doesn't make a difference. But before President Obama got elected, everybody would always say, I'm talking about black people, or even minorities would always say, man, I can't wait for a minority to come into office. I can't wait for a minority to come into office. And the reason why they said that is because they are looking for someone to lead them.
A Messiah.
Right? Now, check this out. They believed, we all believed, that someone of our culture, someone of our background, someone of our color, our ethnicity, is going to be the ones to basically save. It's going to be our Jesus. It's going to be our Caesar. It's going to be our deliverer from evil, right? That's what we believed.
Yeah.
When once that person came into office and he wasn't a Martin Luther King, he wasn't a Jesus Christ, he was a typical president. We lost faith. Literally, we lost faith. I don't understand how come we literally lost faith.
The black community has leaders, and the white community has CEOs. They have institutions. You're right. They have institutions. They have mechanisms that
that backs up what they want to do, what they want to accomplish. They have boards and stockholders. See, we have leaders that we can't vote out, or leaders that ain't got no degrees in nothing.
So true. So true. It's crazy to be, it's crazy as Christians. I'm talking about Christians now, but Christians per se. The reason why I badger Christians so much is because they believe in Jesus. And Jesus is totally against what most people believe in him for or believe in him as. Do you know Jesus was, and we don't see him as this because we only look at the mythical Jesus, but we don't look at the historical Jesus.
Mm.
And what happens is Jesus was a revolutionary,
right.
a revolutionary in his time.
Right.
What he did was, listen, my people, we need to come back on top because I'm tired
right.
of seeing
right.
us
right.
down. I'm tired of seeing us ostracized. So what did Jesus do? Jesus put his own life on the line, whether it's true or not,
right,
Jesus,
right.
the story of it, is Jesus put his own life on the line and said, you know what? I'm going to make a change based on what I do because I believe. But what we do is we say, no, I'm going to wait on Jesus to fix the problem.
Right.
But Jesus would be like, no, you don't wait. I didn't wait on God to fix the problem. I did it with God so the problem can be fixed. God is not going to move unless I move. And what a lot of people, people who believe in Christ and believe in all of that, they actually we actually say, listen, I'm going to wait on Jesus, and because Jesus is going to have the answers. Jesus is basically going to be my wheelchair to get me to the next level.
I'm gonna tell you what it boiled down to, brother, and we're gonna have to deal with it. You know what it boiled down to? We're afraid to die, and that religions are like a cocoon that cultivates that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a saying: fear is fear, is fear is fear. If you got it, it shows up everywhere in your life.
Mm-hmm. So
you
true.
Just can't be fearful in one. No, fear is fear.
So
and
true.
That fear of hell and death and dying and soul and the fear of death, not having a good understanding of what death is, it's going to keep us where we are.
So true. And on that note,
well,
it's always an honor, always a pleasure
yes,
talking
sir.
To you.
Yes, sir.
I really, really enjoy it.
Yes, sir.
I just to let you know, it's the reason why I say it's a privilege, you being online, just as well as the other people, but the reason why I say you in particular is a privilege is because there may be some people out there actually listening to this show that won't necessarily accept the claims of Christianity. And since this is a Christianity based show, more so than any type of religion, they won't necessarily accept it coming out of a Christian's mouth per se.
Right.
But you have a voice coming from a different perspective, and it could be somebody else. And every single time you call in, there could be a chance that somebody's listening to the things that you're saying, and you could be helping somebody make a change. You could literally be making the next Martin Luther King or Frederick Douglass. Or any of these other black leaders to actually go out there and make a change.
Done. Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's why I say you in particular, it's a huge privilege because a lot of times when black people look at Christianity, automatically they think the color white.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Automatically without